and their affiliates. There was almost zero correlation. It seemed obvious what we needed to do. To collect intelligence and engage the enemy, CTC needed to operate in these enemy safe havens. I noted 6 key geographic regions in need of CTC investment. 1. Southeast Asia, particularly at the border confluences of Malaysia, Indonesia, and the Philippines. 2. Lebanon and other pockets in the Levant, such as Palestine. 3. Strips of ungoverned space throughout the Sahel and the Horn of Africa, but primarily Sudan. 4. The tri-border region of Paraguay, Brazil, and Argentina. 5. The Saudi Peninsula, especially Yemen. 6. Afghanistan, the most important AQ safe haven, and parts of Pakistan. After 5 days, I briefed Kofor and Ben. I used a whiteboard with colored markers. The mission was simple. CTC, working with the rest of the clandestine service, must penetrate enemy safe havens to understand the enemy, to discern its plans and intentions, and to prepare the covert action battlefield. The most important, most immediate objective was Afghanistan. Rich, a tall, lanky operations officer, was the new chief of the CTC unit responsible for AQ, known as Alec Station. His office fell under my command. Rich had also started his career in Africa and spent most of his time in high-risk assignments. I thought he was experienced and competent, but conceited and aloof, with a sense of entitlement. He thought that I was competent but bull-headed, with little consideration for others. We both understood that the mission trumped any negative impressions of each other. We both demanded much, from ourselves, from those under our command, and from our leaders. In the ensuing months and years, Rich and I would learn to depend on each other. I grew to understand his intense and heroic passion for the mission and for his people. Our mutual respect grew. We would become brothers in arms. After the briefing, Rich and I talked about Afghanistan. He volunteered to take a team into Afghanistan to regenerate our liaison relationship with Ahmed Shah Massoud, who led the United Front, also known as the Northern Alliance. The Northern Alliance label was favored by the Pakistani government, which sought to portray them as a Tajik-dominated organization isolated in the north, with no reach into the rest of the country. Massoud, an ethnic Tajik, in fact worked to extend his network throughout Afghanistan. He wanted to overthrow the Taliban and drive out the foreign AQ leaders who had insidiously ingratiated themselves among them. Kofor, Ben, and I discussed Rich's planned trip. He had already pulled his team together. Rich understood this was the critical first move in our strategic initiative to penetrate enemy safe havens. Afghanistan was the most important safe haven, harboring the most important terrorist threat. Given the political and physical risks of the mission, Kofor required DDO approval and the support of other components within the clandestine service. Rich's team would stage from Tajikistan, under the auspices of the Central Eurasia CE Division, although Afghanistan was bureaucratically within the Near East NE Division. CTC had the mission and the money, but the geographic divisions had the turf. Kofor, Rich, and I went to DDO Jim Pavitt's office, where he was joined by Near East hand Gary Schroen, who had been a key player in supplying our Afghan allies during the Soviet occupation. He knew Massoud and many of the Afghan United Front leaders. Pavitt listened to our briefing. With Schroen as his supporting expert witness, Pavitt argued that the risk was too high for uncertain gain. "I will be down there in the auditorium having to face the families of my dead officers," he exclaimed. "Well, I will be among the dead because I'm leading them," Rich replied. There was a moment of tense silence. I filled the void, stressing the risk we faced if we did not go. Bin Laden had proclaimed war against the United States. AQ had attacked our embassies in East Africa just last year. Their intent and growing capabilities seemed clear. Unless we collected more intelligence so we could disrupt and degrade their networks and safe havens, we would be hit again. These coming attacks, I argued, would be viewed with justification as another CIA intelligence failure. I intentionally couched my plea in terms of bureaucratic risk, because that would resonate with Pavitt. Pavitt inquired about the viability of remote communication with our Afghan allies, which could mean avoiding a dangerous deployment into Afghanistan. No, we have to be there. We have to demonstrate our partnership. This is about respect. There is no substitute for sitting with them, breaking bread with them. We must be in their territory with them, I emphasized. This seemed so fundamental, so obvious. I had served in Africa, where fundamentals of life and death were painfully present every day. Prideful sources and cooperative insurgents did not want to be on the end of a CIA communications tether, absent a modicum of rapport and trust, which required some shared risk. We needed not just data on the enemy, but knowledge of our allies rooted in empathetic understanding. I figured that out on my first tour. Pavitt continued to resist. Schroen noted the high risk of the mission, but steered clear of making any other argument for or against the team's deployment. Looking directly at Pavitt, Kofor flatly proclaimed, "Sir, you are wrong. We must go." He did not explicitly state what other course of action he might take, nor did he spell out the political risks of inaction as I had. There was no need, because as the chief of the director's CTC, Kofor had a dotted line straight to Director Tenet. Kofor also had his own networks downtown, in the White House and on the Hill. Kofor also had a great reputation in the CT arena. He found Carlos Ramirez Sanchez, a.k.a. the Jackal, in Sudan. Kofor had chased bin Laden out of Sudan. As the new chief of CTC, he had plenty of operational and political juice in the tank, and he just hit the gas pedal. It was a brief, full roar of horsepower. Then he backed off and waited. Pavitt regrouped, asked a few more questions, and, still not happy, relented. As we walked out of his office, down the quiet halls, Rich could not help but exult, "Boss, that was terrific. Great work." Kofor stopped, swiveled, and barked at us. "Don't expect that again. I cannot say that to the DDO and get away with it. I cannot." He just had, but Rich and I had enough sense not to point that out. We walked in silence back to CTC, weighing the risks in Afghanistan and inside our own government, our own agency. 10 days later, Rich and his team launched. They made it to Dushanbe, a small city in the capital of Tajikistan, a grimy example of post-Soviet architectural and political failure. The crumbling city was periodically racked with political criminal violence. Gangs fought for drug trade dominance and other criminal enterprise rights. There was no U.S. embassy there. From a Washington policy perspective, in September 1999, Tajikistan was an inconsequential splotch of mountainous land, hard on the northern flank of Afghanistan, unworthy of consideration. Rich and his 5 men hunkered down in a crummy CIA safe house and contacted Massoud's people, who had their own safe sites in the town. Harsh weather posed challenges for helicopter transport over the Hindu Kush. We were not sure how long Rich and his team would need to wait, but the next day they hitched a ride on one of Massoud's decrepit Soviet-era Mi-17 helicopters. Soaring southward, up and around peaks nearing 18,000 feet, battered by brutal winds, they crossed into Afghanistan's narrow upper Panjshir Valley. When they landed, the Afghans quickly escorted them to a guest house, a simple, old, rock-walled structure on the hillside. By U.S. standards, it was primitive, but it was the best residence in the neighborhood. The Afghans prided themselves on being good hosts. They would share whatever they had. Concerned about their visitors' welfare, the Afghans did not want any CIA guys wandering around unescorted. They had fresh memories of broken U.S. promises when the United States and the entire international community abandoned them after the Soviet withdrawal. With no international support, Afghanistan had quickly devolved into a bitter and brutal civil war heaped on top of a recent brutal foreign occupation. No doubt they wondered what the CIA would want this time. Massoud greeted Rich and his team warmly. After the initial pleasantries, Rich explained that his mission was about AQ, only AQ, and the United Front should not expect any help in overthrowing the Taliban government. President Clinton, as Rich explained, had granted limited, narrow approval to collect intelligence